Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet him, greet him, treat him, and street him. Today's date is August 26, 2015, and I am your skeptical host, Ken Milne. This will be the last of the SGEM Extra summer content. The next episode will launch season number 4 with a super big announcement. I'm very excited about a new initiative that I think will take the SGEM to the next level of knowledge translation. Now, the goal is always to cut that KT window down from over 10 years to less than 1 year. This new initiative will accomplish this on a global scale. Now, we've hinted about this special project before on the SGEM. I even promised Chris Carpenter it would knock his socks off. Many more of you may not be wearing socks after hearing the announcement. In fact, once you've heard about this super big SGEM surprise, tweet me pictures of you without socks. Until then, enjoy the fourth of the fabulous FOMED speakers lighting the way in Edmonton earlier this year as part of the Canadian Association of Emergency Physicians meeting. Bond, Chris Bond, is the fourth of these fabulous FOMED speakers. Chris is an EM physician and clinical lecturer at the University of Calgary. His interests include knowledge translation, FOMED, and all things food and wine related. Make sure you check out his great blog called Sock Mob, Standing on the Corner, Minding My Own Business, the number one risk factor of getting your beep kicked on a Friday night. Chris's talk is entitled FOAM, Consolidation, Integration, and the Future. He describes his talk as How to Keep Up with FOMED, a discussion of quality assurance, quality metrics within FOAM, and efforts to develop and implement a FOAM curriculum. You can watch Chris give his talk on YouTube and download a copy of his PDF slides. Now, I'm going to promise the SGEM audience that I will upgrade my audio and visual technology the next time I go to record one of these live conferences. The audio might not be the best, but the content is fabulous. So here he is, Bond, Chris Bond, giving his FOMED talk.
Thanks very much, Ken. So thanks, Ken and K1 Masters for having me come talk today. So you're going to notice we're all Star Wars nerds. It seems Star Trek is doing very poorly today. So in your programs it says that Rob Rogers is talking and he's DARPA educator. It sounded like a pretty badass title, so I didn't change it or anything like that. But my talk is actually very similar to his. And so I'm going to be talking about the consolidation, integration, and the future of FOAM. And well, some of this is going to be pretty similar to some of the stuff that Eve said for about the first 5 minutes or so. We're then going to get in more to the kind of discussion of quality as well as discussion of integration into curricula. So in terms of conflicts of interest, I have no financial ones to declare. I am an active FOAM blogger at softmob.org as well as a few other sites. I'm a proud supporter of FOAM and I'm a social media director at the University of Calgary as of about a month ago. So, clearly, I'm biased towards loving FOAM. So we're going to talk about keeping up with FOAM, we're going to talk about quality, and we're going to talk about integration. So this is kind of redundant at this point. I was thinking I might be a little earlier, but what FOAM is Free Open Access Medical Education. And the reason this whole term was coined was in 2012, Mike Cadogan, who's in charge of life in the fast lane, he was drinking some beers before his talk at ISEM, and he was in Dublin, and looking at the beer, and people didn't like the term social media. Social media was a real kind of internet geeky term, and you know, all this newfangled Twittering and all that kind of stuff. And so he came up with the term FOAM. Now in 3 years, it's actually really improved, and social media has become a pretty accepted term within FOAM. And so I'm sure everybody here has seen what happens when you mix Diet Coke and Mentos, and FOAM is exploding. I mean, it's here, we're all drinking from it. And looking at some basic numbers, so this is a study from Mike Mallon from 2014 in academic medicine, and a survey of 406 emergency medicine residents in the United States showed that 70% of them felt that podcasts were helpful, where only 54% thought textbooks were helpful. That seems kind of low to me, but that was the survey. 36% of them felt that individual journal articles were useful. And then looking at Eve's data, oh, she's left now, but Eve's data from a study she did of Canadian emergency medicine residents and program directors, we can see how frequently residents are using these phone resources. So 90% of Canadian emergency med residents who responded are using podcasts each month, 86% are using blogs, and 71% are using videos. So it's there, so we just need to get used to it and embrace it. And you've also seen this slide, which shows the exponential growth of phone over the past 10 years. 10 years ago, there were about 2 phone blogs. Now there's over 140 blogs and over 40 podcasts. And that's just growing. Now, how do we deal with this? This is like information overload. You know, this is internet to the max. I know that I can't keep up with every single one of these, and some of them I don't want to keep up with, but I definitely want to. You know, some of them are great resources that we need to use. At this point, I have to insert the obligatory cat slide because I'm a crazy cat lady. And so, unfortunately, phone doesn't fit into a nice little box like each of these cats. So what can we do? We can use some watch lists, this is the first thing. And we can look at multi-author sites. So here I've just highlighted a few great resources. Life at the Fastlane is an Australian resource, headed up by Mike Cadogan and Chris Nixon. It's your one-stop shop for phone. If you're gonna pick one place to go, it's the best one. They do weekly reviews of all the best phone resources on the internet. They also do the research and reviews where they look at specifically just at journal articles that are being used. Academic Life Emergency Medicine by Michelle Lynn in the US isn't so much a consolidation or curation of foam as it is a mass producer of excellent foam. So both on clinical topics and non-clinical topics, they're publishing every day, Monday to Sunday. If you're into pediatrics, HemGeek is probably a great place to look. They're curating pediatric foam, the best resources every week on Fridays. And then closer to home, Boring EM is somewhere where there's a ton of great content coming out. So one of the big benefits here is that these sites are all multi-author, and 21% of blogs are now multi-author. There are multiple benefits to this. The first is it decreases the workload. All of this work is pro bono, and lots of us can be doing other academic endeavors, ones that might get us more respect or tenure or all those types of things. We could also be working clinical shifts and getting paid. This is just putting in hours that for, you know, helping out all the med students, residents, and staff docs out there. By increasing the frequency of posts with multi-author sites, we lead to increased readership. And it's not just about the hits, it's about crowdsourced peer review. So by having more readers, we open a dialogue, and we get more discussion among experts from around the globe. And really, when you have thousands of people looking at it, as soon as you get a few starting to comment, you get great discussion. And you get all of these experts from across the world talking about the accuracy of your post, and then it can be amended immediately if there's a problem. Another method of consolidating your phone is using a customized search engine like Google Phone or Phone Search. So this is a unified search of all the phone resources on the web. This was created by Todd Rain, who's an Emerge doc in Vancouver. And this is somewhere where if you saw a podcast or blog once and you want to look it up quickly on shift, you can sort by blog, sort by podcast. You can also have the traditional academic literature in that search. Feedly and RSS Radio are a way to consolidate your blogs and your podcasts as one area so that you can use them in your downtime. So Feedly is an app where all your blogs that you subscribe to will just show up, and then when you have a few minutes, you can get some learning done. RSS Radio allows you to basically turn your car into a classroom. It allows you, you know, all the guys in here are probably triathletes or ride like 200K a day on their bikes because you're all the range cops and crazy. And RSS Radio, you get your podcasts, you subscribe, you put it on. That's learning while you're doing something else. It's fantastic. So let's talk about the elephant in the room now, okay? I mean, it's been addressed several times, and it will continue to be addressed, and it needs to be addressed. So ensuring quality is the most notable critique of foam. And I'm just going to talk a bit about progress on quality assurance, because there's nothing perfect yet, but we're working on it. So I'm going to talk about the three main markers of foam first. So one are the learners, two, the teachers, and three, the producers of foam. So the foam learners are the most vulnerable group. The reason why is because they lack the expertise to situate these foam materials into their normal textbook learning. So say you haven't read the entire Rosens, you're a med student, and you're using a foam resource as, you know, this is what I'm going to do for this patient. Well, that's worrisome, obviously, because we don't know, is that a good foam resource, is it not? Say a med student comes up to you on shift and says, oh, we got this patient with chest pain, 2 negative ECGs, serial troponins are negative, we should probably admit him to a chest pain monitoring unit. Everybody in here would laugh, because we're Canadians and we practice good medicine. No, just kidding. But really, you know, if you're listening to a bunch of US podcasts that are based on chest pain risk stratification, it's going to be different, and there are regional differences involved. You know, the other thing, maybe somebody's going to watch a code and then come up to you afterwards and say, why didn't we put ECMO lines in? Because they were listed to MGRIT. Well, if you're in San Diego at one particular hospital, when a certain guy's working, you might get ECMO here in your recess, but that's about it. But it's all over the place, right? So that's when it brings in the teachers, the champions. We need these guys in our departments helping out, right? For time immemorial, we've been teaching all the learners in the department based on Gestalt, based on what we know and what we've learned taken from other people. Now we have these role models who are online. They're docs, great docs, who are trying to help out and provide information. But we need people within our own departments who can help to curate and direct learners towards resources that they think are better. So not every resource is perfect, not every resource is great, but if you have champions in your department, everyone does, everyone has people who follow foam resources, even if it's not your thing, you're like, I'm not really into this foam thing, there are people you can talk to in your department who do follow it and can say, you know what, this is a good resource, it's generally very reliable, this one's not. And I'd suggest that you actually talk with those people and have those people discuss with the students and the learners. Foam producers, right now, people like Brent Toma and Teresa Chan are leading the innovations in quality. So, only in the last 2 years, there's been a significant number of papers discussing how we can assess quality with foam, how we can make it more automated, how we can make it instantaneous when foam is published. I mean, I think things like having a critical appraisal tool used for your foam, that's something that really enhances its quality. But there aren't perfect metrics yet, that's for sure, and it's a work in progress. At this time, I think that we're still at a point where we need our local champions before we reach the point of automation. Some other methods that people are trying to kind of automate the quality assessment of foam are using things like Reddit's foam end page. You know, I mean, if you go to a restaurant, you're gonna look on Yelp or you're gonna look somewhere and you're gonna say, well, I'm not gonna go to the restaurant that gets 40% by everyone. But you can look at the places where everyone is voting it up, everyone is saying it's great, and those can be the resources that you can start with to look at. Those are the ones that maybe are gonna create the most discussion, be most stimulating to you, maybe potentially practice changing. Foambase.org is another fairly recent site that does a similar thing. So now I'd like to talk about integrating foam into our curriculum. This brings up the question, should we have a foam curriculum? So if I had Chris Nixon in the room right now, who's kind of the co-director of Rising the Fastlane, he'd have a totally different opinion, or he might. He might have changed his tune in the last couple of years. But he would say, we shouldn't have a foam curriculum. Foam is asynchronous. We keep saying that. Foam is for each person to learn differently. What I need from foam is not what you need from foam, is not what somebody in another country needs from foam. But that's, in order to gain acceptance of foam, I think that integration is key, and integration into our curricula. Does that mean we're just gonna make another textbook? Not necessarily, but if it comes to something where we're adding it to a textbook, and it's enhancing the textbook, well, that would be great. So there are there's a lot of apprehension with foam, but there was a lot of apprehension with other inventions, like the series of tubes that is the internet. But now it's fully integrated into our daily life. And I think that foam is, you know, if it's not already there, it's going to be in a few years. The last edition of Encyclopedia Britannica was printed in 2012, it's not printed anymore. So if we take the textbook and we add a foam table of contents to it, well, then we have a more powerful resource. We have authors of these foam resources who can provide immediate responses to your feedback. You can interact with them, unlike you've ever been able to do with a textbook before. And with open access resources, it allows us to flip the classroom, which isn't really a concept that's completely new. This has been done for a long time. But with foam, you can flip the classroom like we never have before. And the FlipVM classroom, if you haven't looked at it, is by Stella Yu, another Canadian Emerge doc. And it's a great resource for medical students. So with foam, we can have residents or med students listen to a podcast, listen to a video, watch or read a blog, and then they can supplement that with their traditional textbook learning. And it's a lot more entertaining, but still educational. And then when they come to class, they actually can do higher order cognitive functions, like discuss cases. It's kind of funny that we have people who talk and lecture, and you only retain maybe 10% of what you hear in a lecture. And you have this person talking up at the front who has 15 years of emergency medicine experience, or who has 30 years of being a professor, and they have much more to offer you than throwing Rosen's up on a PowerPoint slide in bullet point form. So why don't we actually use those preceptors and those knowledgeable people to their full capacity by having people use videos, use podcasts, and then come into class and have discussions. And then this is probably one of the most game-changing things with foam, something that just in traditional learning using journals and textbooks we've never had before. And that's access to experts. So with Twitter, we have instant access to world's experts on any question we want. So this is an example from the Penn Emerge Medicine Residency. They had a question about venous thromboembolic disease in the emergency department. Rather than just discussing it amongst themselves, they just said, hey, why don't we ask Jeff Klein? That guy knows something about venous thromboembolic disease. And he responds to them. He gives them the answer that they need right away. For Tammy here, she has a question about using warfarinizing patients in AFib. So who she asks, Ian Steele, he knows something about AFib. Gets her answer right away. This is something that just didn't exist in the past. It's so powerful. In terms of the cutting edge of who's really integrating foam into curriculum, we have to look at academic life emergency medicine. So what they realized was that residents are using foam all the time, and there's a few problems. One, the quality is not consistent. So what the residents are learning, they're kind of worried about. Two, they're not getting any credit for what they're learning. So what they did was they got a 9-person selection board of Emerge docs, mostly program directors in the United States, and they evaluated a bunch of foam resources, and then made educator-endorsed listings, videos, podcasts, 2 to 4 hours long, that supplement the topic, vascular disease, abdominal pain, etc. And then they have post-evaluative quizzes, and then residents in the U.S. can actually get credit for doing that. That's being done in 50 emergency medicine residency programs in the U.S. now. And they're having very good results with that. We only have, 15 emergency medicine residency programs in Canada, and the consistency and quality of training in Canada is fantastic. Why can't we do something similar here? And this is the most hot off the press thing, which is the Academic Life Emergency Medicine University, which plans to start in July 2015. So these will be high-quality online e-courses that can be user-submitted by different residency programs and then evaluated by a large group of experts and program directors that work at ALEM, and hopefully get credit for residents and be a helpful resource for them. So could we potentially have a Canadian foam ed site that was residency-approved foam resources? I think really what we're all looking for here is accountability. Looking for accountability in foam. If we get involvement from all the residency programs, program directors, we increase acceptance, we increase integration, and we increase accountability. And I think that's what everyone wants. Special thanks to Teresa and Ken Milne for inviting me. Teresa for some of the slides. And I'm happy to take any questions.
Well, there you have it. Chris Bond, the fourth of the Fabulous FOMED speakers at CAPE this year. Season number 4 of the SJAM starts in September. I can't wait to get pictures and tweets of all the SJAMers out there without their socks on. You still do have a little time left. Yes, it's not too late to sign up for Falls View Beam conference at the beautiful Niagara Falls, Ontario. And it's going to take place September 10th and 11th. I will be there presenting the best evidence in emergency medicine. But until then, and until season 4 starts, remember to be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you heard it on The Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine.